This is major for the players to understand you got all the power. Like, there was a time, trust me, y'all, that everybody was like, shut up. Just be happy that you have a scholarship. So I appreciate these players having the wealth of knowledge to understand their power and trying to use it to their benefit.
That's our own Jalen Rose reacting to the hundreds of Pac-12 football players who announced this week that they would opt out of the coming college football season unless the conference agrees to a list of demands. Demands that could fundamentally alter the way the sport operates. Today, two UCLA players who joined the cause tell us what they hope to change. Then ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh explains what this all means for the future of college football. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, August 5th. This is ESPN Daily. So we're going to start by just having you guys introduce yourselves.
Yeah, I'll go first. So my name is Elisha Guidry. I'm a freshman sophomore defensive back, and I'm majoring in economics at UCLA.
Hi, my name is Latito Bonilla. I'm a rising junior defensive lineman at UCLA, and I'm majoring in geography and environmental studies.
So Elisha and Otito, you are two of the hundreds of Pac-12 football players who've pledged to opt out of this upcoming season unless the conference addresses a series of demands. And those demands were laid out in a Players Tribune article. And they include player-approved COVID-19 safety protocols, a permanent civic engagement task force to address racial injustice, and a 50-50 revenue split between the conference and the currently unpaid athletes, yourselves in each sport. So, Elisha, let's start with you. When did this idea start, and how did you get involved?
It kind of started when the UCLA football team kind of created their letter with their COVID precautions, when their party, and that kind of inspired the Cal football students because they didn't really have the same thing going on at their school with the COVID precautions, and they thought that they could be doing better. So they reached out to other players in the Pac-12 and kind of started a conversation, and actually, They originally reached out to Otito, and Otito reached out to me. So that's kind of how everything got started. I want to say 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Right. And for folks who don't know, that original letter you referred to, Elisha, was from way back in June when the UCLA football team asked for third-party health officials to attend football activities to just kind of make sure COVID protocols were being followed. But Otito, I wanted to ask you as well, who reached out to you? From where and when did this idea land in your lap?
So it kind of started with Andrew Cooper and Jake Curran, you know, at Cal. And that's kind of who originally reached out to me, kind of the both of them at the same time. And when I kind of became a part of this, there are a couple guys who were, you know, already meeting in Zooms. And we kind of got introduced to this entire project and just very open to, you know, what they had to say. We just need a really good way to get everybody coordinated and under one common message. And we understood that we were in a pandemic, and this was a great opportunity for us to utilize something like, you know, Zoom calls, you know, while we're social distancing, because otherwise, you know, in a normal circumstances, we wouldn't have been able to do something of this magnitude, you know, if without a pandemic. And I think just understanding that it's not necessarily the same everywhere, and that it can be improved, and in the current system that we're in, we can make drastic improvement.
And Otito, the letter in the Players Tribune, it links pandemic safety to economic inequality and also racial injustice. Can you explain how those are all connected?
You know, that's one of those things that you could talk about forever, because it's really deep and, you know, cemented in, you know, in our society and in the way our country operates, has operated. You know, when you look at a predominantly black sport, you know, disproportionately, you know, black sport, like football and basketball and some of these other revenue sports, and you look at, you know, some of the things that have been going on within social justice and with social equity, or, you know, economic equity, and, you know, for the black community and for minorities and their push and their struggle. When you exploit a group of people for this amount of time, this is the type of response that you get. You know, we can't sit back any longer and wait for somebody to come save us if we can't even stand up for ourselves. And we were trying to make sure that everyone knows, and not only do we have a voice, we have a powerful voice. And our voices can be the catalyst for change.
Yeah, I mean, Otito, you're calling for a 50-50 revenue split with the conference in each individual sport. What was the reaction to that demand?
So when I first saw that, I was like many other people, and I'm like, well, 50% is, you know, a big asking amount. But, you know, then I started to realize when you look at all these numbers and you look at the degree of exploitation that's been going on, you quickly understand and you quickly realize that, okay, I am worth this amount of money, and that's what we're going to put out there. Of course, that's where negotiation happens. That's how negotiating works. You know, you're going to put yourself at what you're worth. And if you have to go down in order to, and if we meet an agreement that's lower than 50%, we're fine with that.
Elisha, you had mentioned the pandemic earlier as the thing that you were talking to Otito about when this all started. What are your biggest concerns here? What were the concerns that were most important to you?
I mean, for me, it was just how you're supposed to play football and be safe with all that when you have a pandemic just passed through the air. You know, it's kind of, you can't really social distance while you play. So that was kind of the main thing that I was kind of concerned with. And there wasn't really a plan. Like I saw the WNBA and the NBA had great plans with kind of what they were doing with having like an isolated thing, but there wasn't really a plan that was working with football. You know, even the NFL kind of had issues with their guys were speaking out about not really having a plan. There wasn't really anything from the conference that gave me a surety that, okay, we can do this. You know, we all really love football. We all really wanted to play, but you still have this virus and there's still a lot of unknowns about it. And it can get spread through a team really fast because we're all together. We're in tight quarters all the time. So there's just a lot of unknowns and uncertainties that weren't really getting answered. And some of those don't even have an answer, but there wasn't even a plan to combat some of those uncertainties. So those were like a lot of my main concerns.
Otito, the Pac-12's current plan, their best solution right now seems to be to play 10 in-conference games this year. Does that seem like an adequate step in minimizing the risk of COVID?
Pac-12 and, you know, all these other conferences, you know, from my perspective, and I think from our perspective, they are trying their best to, you know, to make sure that we can play this year. And, you know, I don't have a problem with them trying. I think we all know the pandemic typically doesn't care how good your protocols are. Dropping from 12 games to 10 games, you know, trying to limit out-of-conference plays, probably the minimum they could probably do, in my opinion. When you compete against somebody else, you're risking getting COVID-19, regardless if it's out of conference, in conference. I understand the sentiment. They're trying to limit travel. They're trying their best to try to formulate a plan. But as we all know, COVID-19 is a monster. And, you know, it has, you know, devastated a lot of things in this country and around the world. And I'm not sure if people take that in consideration when, you know, you're asking 18, 19, 20, 22, 23 year olds to make the decision to possibly, you know, endanger your life. And I understand we, you know, endanger ourselves every day by playing that game. You know, there's a number of things that could happen when you're playing football, and I get that. But there is also no reason to damage yourself if you don't have to.
Coming up, let's talk about what you guys hope for the future of college football. And just what this massive Pac-12 player group chat actually looks like.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Elijah, there is a remarkable level of coordination here. I mean, we have never seen this in college sports ever. And you guys are on, what is it, a massive group chat now with all of these other players in the Pac-12. How many other players are on this text chain?
We've got over 400, and we're continuing to grow every day as guys have these conversations with their teammates. And not everybody has accepted that face value, you know. Like people have their questions, people have their concerns, but the more conversations we have, I feel like people are coming to agree with it more. You know, I feel like that's kind of what everyone needs to do, you know, have a conversation about.
I wanted to clarify something real quick. I'm 34 years old. The idea of this was unfathomable, but also unfathomable is how 400 people can be on a group chat at the same time. Can you tell me about like how the mechanics of that work? Are you guys all on, is it a normal group message? Is it like GroupMe? Is there WhatsApp? Like what's the platform you guys are using for something that insanely big?
Man, it's GroupMe. A lot of athletes are kind of coming together, having different kind of group chats, especially after the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor killings. You know, athletes put out their messages. Athletes feel the same way, you know. Athletes of all sports are kind of coming together. There's a lot of group meets that have been created that are like that. And that's kind of how we're communicating, because a lot of us are in different regions, but we're all doing the same thing. We're all college athletes. So we kind of all have a shared experience.
Otito, when the group chat and the Players Tribune article and all this stuff began to gain publicity, did you begin to hear from students outside the Pac-12?
There have been various conferences, various sports that have reached out to us from all around the country. And, you know, men, women, it didn't matter. You know, all of them, you know, are reaching out, and they're asking how to be a part of this. They're saying, you know, how can we do this for ourselves? How'd you guys get it done? And let's replicate that. And let's get a real national change going.
Otito, you're also a really good track and field athlete at UCLA. I mean, you compete in shot put and discus. What reaction have you heard from your teammates on the track and field team?
You know, it's been positive, and it's also going to take some educating, trying to get everybody from, you know, the non-revenue sports perspective on the same page. Being a dual sport athlete, you tend to understand a little bit more what they go through and understand how, you know, the rest of society sees us. And, you know, you get some of their sentiments, and you try to make that make sense. So they've had a pretty positive reaction. You know, they've been contacting and texting just to know more. And what we're trying to do right now is coordinate with the rest of the sports on campus and, you know, see if they want to be a part of this.
Tito, are you concerned at all about punishment, repercussions, either from coaches or otherwise, for being part of this movement?
Not really. I mean, in regards to, you know, fears of retaliation and ramifications of doing some of these things, why initially, you know, you start to think, okay, how far do I want to take this? You know, I want to take it as far as it can go, because when you speak out against something or speak out about something that that's not necessarily has everybody's, not everybody agrees upon in college football, ultimately, you get harassed. And sometimes that comes from the coaches. Sometimes that comes from your teammates. Sometimes that comes, you know, comes from a number of different avenues. But a lot of times we feel like our voices are suppressed. And right now, you know, I'm at peace with myself, because at the end of the day, I understand that football or not, I have the rest of my life to live. I also understand that, I have a dream job and I have a career that I want to embark on later in life for the rest of my life. You know, even if I do go play in the NFL, and maximum 30, 35 years, what am I going to do after that? I have 50 or 60, however long I live to embark on something and make a really big mark on the world. And that's kind of where I'm thinking with this. I'm looking down the road. If I don't do something now, I'm not sure who's going to help us.
Before we wrap up, guys, is there anything that you wanted to say or something I didn't ask you about that you thought was important to mention?
I think it's important to mention, there's something that's not on those demands that, that's a part of our goals. And that's to ultimately change the perspective of the student athlete. And to just make sure some of those stigmas that are associated with us as individuals are completely diminished. We go through things like regular people do, and we're not superheroes, and we're human beings, and just like anybody else can be affected by COVID-19 or be affected by mental health or be affected by physical things. But I think it's just trying to make sure that people understand where we're coming from and they hear us. I mean hear us, like listen with an open mind.
I'm gonna add the same sentiments, just for people to know that there's a man in the uniform, there's a woman in the uniform. When we line up and we pursue the sport we love, we still gotta go home. Just kind of have, like Otito said, some empathy, and some understanding, kind of broaden your perspective. I just want to inspire. We just want to inspire people to know if they believe something's right, they have the means to make the change. To go and make the change, even if it costs everything. You're going to be benefiting someone that comes after. You're going to feel good about it for yourself because you know you did all you can. We feel like this is going to improve a lot of things in this country, a lot of things for athletes.
Thank you, Otito and Elisha, for sharing your thoughts with me and taking some time out of your day to explain what's happening in the Pac-12.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now that we've heard from some of the players, let's turn to what this means for college football as a whole. ESPN college football reporter Mark Schlabaugh joins us to share how he sees all of this playing out.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So now that we've heard that the players are asking for a list of demands that basically amounts to athletes from the Pac-12 unionizing their labor force, what does this actually mean for this year's college football season? Mark Schlabaugh, who covers college sports for ESPN, has been following this story. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
Good, Pablo. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to take the time with you here to step back and kind of zoom out at the context of these Pac-12 players' demands. How did we get to this point?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. It's definitely the year of player activism, and I definitely don't think we would have seen this 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. You look at what happened with the state of Mississippi getting the flag change there and other players across the country. I mean, they're taking a stand and standing up for their rights. And, I think it's spread throughout the FBS.
How are the coaches processing what is basically unprecedented in terms of a movement of labor organizing among the athletes on their teams?
We started hearing about it last Friday night. And, you know, we were told at the time that, there were some head coaches in the Pac-12 that had attempted to gauge how much participation there was on their teams. You know, we were told by a couple of sources that a couple of the coaches came back and said, well, it's not our, you know, we don't have any guys involved in that. You know, it's not our problem. And yet, when the names started coming out, there were several players that were on this particular coach's roster. So, you know, I think the league and the athletic directors and the coaches were caught off guard by it. I don't think anybody was fully aware of the extent of it, that it involved all 12 schools, that it involves, you know, as many as 400 or more players, and how organized it was and how organized it continues to be.
So the Pac-12 is in a unique situation when it comes to this stuff, because many of the schools in the conference have decided to move to online learning in the fall without students returning to campus en masse. So several schools are in states with high coronavirus cases, California and Arizona being two of them. But they did decide to play in conference games, 10 games. How was the Pac-12 able to justify that plan before they announced it?
I guess they assumed the players were on board with it. That is one of the bigger concerns talking to these players, is the fact that, you know, schools like UCLA and USC and really, I mean, outside of the Pac-12, the entire state system of the University of California, the largest university system in the country, is doing online-only learning. You know, the players, from their side of it, you know, they feel like they're being excluded. They're being asked to come back to campus along with employees. So that makes them employees. So they're entitled to some sort of pay for, you know, even risk pay for coming back and putting their health at risk and playing football during this pandemic.
Do you think that kind of an idea has a shot of actually being accomplished?
You know, Bob, I don't have an issue with any demand on this list, but when I got to part four, economic freedom and equity, under fair market pay rights and freedoms, and the first one, distribute 50% of each sports total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports, you know, that one to me is so far-fetched that, you know, they almost lose a little bit of credibility, to be honest. It's never going to happen. I think name, image, likeness is a no-brainer. We've seen federal court cases trying to establish that. And I think most conferences and the NCAA and some schools are finally on board with it. But I think in terms of 50% revenue share, there's just no way.
How do you think this resolves, given all of this chaos at pretty much every level of the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think these players and have raised some legitimate issues and brought up some serious concerns. And I think health and safety and testing and social distancing and everything else, you know, we've seen just in the last few days, Bobo, we've seen players come out from LSU and Indiana and some other places who have said, you know, they had COVID-19, they lost 20 or 30 pounds and they're still recovering. And we've seen programs across the country like Kansas and Kansas State and Indiana and Michigan State and others who've had to shut down because of outbreaks, you know, they haven't even started tackling and blocking yet. So I still think the odds are stacked against us. If there's not a season, you know, we reported a couple of months ago, $4.2 billion is at stake.
Sheesh.
And if we don't play football this fall, the face of big-time college athletics is going to change forever. And, you know, where player compensation and these other things fall in line, we'll have to see.
Yeah, $4.2 billion, but who's counting, right?
Right.
Mark, thank you so much for taking the time here with us.
Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.